League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome, everybody. This is Mike TV, episode 38. In this episode, we're going to be covering Westworld, season 3, episode 2, entitled The Winter Line. My name is Lisa. Joining me is Dean. Hello, Dean. Welcome.
Rehababum. Rehobin Banam.
We were just talking before. Okay, if you listen to our coverage of the first episode of Westworld Season 3, you'll know that I stumbled all the way through on this machine's name. Even our number one fan, our remotes one fan, Roby, even makes fun of me in an email, Dean. I'll read a little bit of it. But
Roby bump.
He calls it the AI whose name starts with R.
Yeah.
Lisa had me so confused about the name. Okay, I've got it. Here's how you say it. It's re, and then hobo, like a hobo, and then om. Rehoboam, Rehoboam, and then just put it all fast together. Rehoboam. I can say it perfectly now. I won't fuck it up again.
All
right. Rehoboam. Anyway, how'd you like this episode, Dean?
Well, I thought I was following along last week, and then this week comes along, and lo and behold, what a simulation within a simulation. Now my mind is officially fucked.
Well, I have two words, Stubbs and Lee. It's like they heard my request for Lee to return. I was so happy. I saw his name in the credits, and I was like, yeah. Simon Carterman's in this episode. So happy. So
you didn't get to see him stripped down naked in this one, though.
I was fine with that. Okay. We had enough nudity in this one. We got to see everybody else naked, so yeah, we're good. Much. We're good. You know, I have I want to talk about some more speculation I have here, but you know, in this episode, we saw hosts that didn't know they were hosts.
Right.
I.e. Lee. And we saw a world that is a simulation. Now, you know that there was a sequel to the movie Westworld, and it was called Future World.
Right.
Now, I never saw it. I'm sure it's not good. However, I heard a theory that what if where Dolores and Caleb are is actually Future World and is actually like another park and not the real world.
Well, I almost wondered is War World even an actual park?
I don't believe War World is. I believe that was Serac's, part of Serac's simulation.
Yeah, it's this episode basically made me remember that. Oh yeah, I have no idea what's going on in this show.
Oh, okay, we'll get it straight. Hey, but you know what? Medieval World is a thing. Park number 4, Westeros World, if you will.
Yeah.
Did you catch the Game of Thrones reference that was thrown into?
Well, I did notice all the medieval stuff in the back.
But you didn't get the straight on.
Did he actually call it Westeros World?
No. Oh. There was a Drogon cameo and Benioff and Weiss cameo.
Oh, okay.
The creators were technicians in that world.
Nice.
All right, we'll get there. Oh, all right.
So that means that world is really awesome until like the last hour you're there, and it just sucks.
Until it makes no sense and pisses you off.
Yeah, you're like doing awesome, and all of a sudden you're just like, what? Wait, I was just across the world 5 seconds ago. Now some cripple guy's following me around and he's leading the charge. Come on now.
Come on, don't say some cripple guy. It's Brand.
Some broken guy.
Oh.
Sorry, I wanted the official terminology, the broken.
Mm-hmm. So, just a quick bright siding it here on the COVID-19 check-in. Seeing this Game of Thrones reference in this episode gave me a glimmer of hope, Dean. Because we're all trapped in our homes, that also means presumably George R. R. Martin is also safe and snug in his home. He can't go to any cons. He can't go to any events. He's got nothing better to do but finish those damn books.
Yeah, fat chance.
No, it's going to happen. Everybody, tweet George R. R. Martin. Tell him, finish those books during the COVID-19 crisis. All right. I watched a couple other things. I know we said we weren't going to do this at the start of Westworld, but I have just a couple shows I got to shout out this week that I've already watched.
The Yawning Dead, I'm sure.
The Walking Dead.
That's what I meant.
Did the send off of Michonne this week. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. It was heartwarming. They didn't kill her off. Spoiler alert. They sent her on the journey to find Rick as predicted.
So is she going to show up in one of these movies eventually?
I'm sure. If the movies ever
come out. Yeah. Is George R. R. Martin filming those? What's going on?
Probably. The Curb Your Enthusiasm season finale aired. It was wonderful. It aired right after Westworld. It was hilarious. I know you don't watch it. I wish you did. This one included a story of a starring Chaz Bono playing a transgendered man.
Right.
Actually Funkhauser's daughter, who transgendered into Joey Funkhauser, is this character. And ended up with a penis so large that he doesn't know how to handle it. And so when he quickly turns from side to side while nude, the penis is prone to knock things off counters and such. So hilarity ensues. I wish you watched it. I know you just have nothing to say about this. And another show you don't watch, last show I'm going to talk. I know we're going to talk about Better Call Saul in just a couple of days. We'll be back with our Better Call Saul coverage, which was incredible this week. So I'm not going to talk about that. But Dean, if I could just get you to watch one 30-minute show, it's less than 30 minutes when you take out the commercials. Pull up. It's going to be on Hulu. It's FX. FX airs their shows on Hulu the next day, right?
Sure.
So please just watch Better Things, season 4, episode 4, entitled DNA. You don't even have to know anything about the show. Just please watch it.
Okay.
It's so funny. It opens with Pamela Adlon singing Elton John, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, playing the piano, singing it terribly off key. not to be funny, really to be just kind of heartwarming. But then there is a very touching, sweet moment in it with a baby owl in this episode. But there is a hilarious episode with her mother. She is trying to get her mother to get to spit into the vial so that she can send off for 23andMe or whatever DNA crap. And her mom refuses to spit into this vial, and because it's just too undignified. And that is hysterical. And then finally, the capper is her fight with her daughter. And I just won't go any further, except for say that this show pushes the boundaries with the expletives like none other I've ever seen. Last season, they had her youngest daughter, Duke, who's maybe, that's the stick on this show, is that all the female characters have traditional male names that are a shortened version of a female name. Like the main character, the mother, Pamela Adlon's Samantha, but she goes by Sam. Mm-hmm. And then her daughters are Max, Frankie, and Duke. All short for, I don't know what they all short for. And then her mother is Phil, which is short for Phyllis. Anyway, I could go on and on about Better Things, but this is not a Better Things podcast. But Oh, I was going to say last season there was an episode where Duke, her youngest daughter, who's maybe like 7 or 8, maybe a little older, maybe like 10 or 11. She's fighting with the middle daughter and they're cussing at each other. And Sam keeps telling them to stop. And finally, she just is like, you know what? Have at it. Say whatever you want to say. And the words that fly out of this child's mouth for about 5 minutes straight are like none other I've ever heard. It that's something last season. Now they topped it this
better season. Than Carl on Shameless.
I never watched Shameless. All right. Well, anyway, that's Better Things. Everybody check it out. It's a great, great show. I know folks over on Radio Labyrinth have noped out on it. Louis C.K. is not involved with it anymore, but I think it's still great. Dean, you've been watching anything else so far this week since we last spoke?
Well, we spoke so recently. No, not really. Except for Westworld. I've been watching Westworld.
Westworld, baby. All right. So you liked this episode? So let's dive in.
Oh, I mean, I can't ever not like an episode of Westworld. Mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I love how they teased us last week with the drunk guy talking about it's all a simulation and a simulation, man. And then, bam, they hit and us with the simulation and a simulation. Like, when you realize that that's what happened, it made me just be like, oh, bravo. That's a nice little just throwaway line from the first episode, but then you hit us immediately with that. And it throws everything out of whack at this point.
You don't think the show that's like, it's like meta commentary within meta commentary, like the show's trying to tell us without telling us that the actual world they're showing us is also a simulation. I mean, I'm always hints to that,
but you know, it is one of those things where when you're watching a show, like, you know, I don't want the series to end with like, and it was all happening inside of a USB drive, you know, like it's kind of
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Like, oh, actually all this was happening inside of the fingernail of a god and inside of a eyelash of another god.
Hey, before we do dive in, Roby wrote us, and you can write us too at miketvpodcast@gmail.com. And he wrote just a little bit about our last episode, and I wanted to read that first, and then I'll read a few of his thoughts as we progress through this week's episode. But he does say that Rehoboam is a predictive AI based on algorithms. It predicts human behavior based on data about humans that has been about the humans that have been fed into it. Partly based on the Westworld info provided from the hats. Right, Roby, we mentioned that. And then he says, I believe the divergences are behaviors where it can't predict a possible outcome because the androids, I'm going to correct him here, they're called hosts. I'll insert hosts. He can't, the behaviors where it can't predict possible outcomes because the hosts don't react predictably. That will be Dolores's advantage over the AI thwarting her. Ooh, I like that theory. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. All the AI is, I'm very curious to see what the whole, you know, like, because obviously the whole black and white screens of the circle where we see the divergence and stuff, that's like, and it seems to be peeking off of her, right? But then this week we saw the screen of the peak, but it didn't. But we never saw Dolores, so it's also peeking off
Bernard,
right? Off. So it's finding the five host balls. I'm thinking that the brain balls, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking it's finding all of those. You know, I had this thought last week because the first ping was in China, and then she gets pinged around the other side of the world, and obviously we don't know how much time passes between those things, but I did think, is it possible that we find out there might be more than one Dolores walking around right now?
Oh, that's very possible, especially with that room full of Bernards this week. Yeah, I think anything is possible. So that's a really good thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Shall we dive in?
Let's go.
So we're going to go scene by scene this week because it makes most sense with how the show unfolded, and especially with so much repetition in some of the scenes. So we'll see. I think it'll make for the best conversation flow. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, we open in War World, exactly where we left Maeve from the post-credit scene at the end of episode one. And just like we saw before, Maeve wakes up with a gun in her hand and a hostage. And this time she's shocked to realize that she can also speak Italian. And in walks Hector.
Yeah.
Yay. Were you happy to see him?
Yes. And I mean, we saw him in the preview, so we knew he would be showing up. But yeah. I did like the reunion. And I especially like at first her reaction because she really thinks it's him. And
I know. She's so happy. And he says all the words to her to make her think that he knows who he is, even though we learn later it's just part of his script. And he also gives her a cyanide pill, and they begin their grand escape. And he shows her that he has plans in his pocket as they run past a German officer who's searching a bunch of prisoners in a courtyard and demanding the plans. And they are captured at the city gates, and Maeve tries to use her power, that control that she has over the hosts, to make them let them to set them free. She says, let us pass immediately. And when that doesn't work, she hilariously shoves her cyanide pill into the eye of one of the officers, and they're able to run off in all of the chaos. Eventually they end up at this awesome, and I don't know cars. This was a 1940s awesome convertible, bright red.
Yeah,
super like hot rod of car of the 40s. What kind of car is that?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if Rolls Royces were German. It kind of looked like that style, but I'm not sure.
It was a cool car.
I'm not an old school car person either.
Yeah. So if you know, write in and tell us. Correct us on our.
Yeah, I drive a Prius, so I don't know.
Hey, I drive a Yaris, so I get it. You know, I understand. Remember, like, what's his face in Watchmen? Oh my God, how quickly the names escape us. The guy who wore the Mylar mask.
Petey?
Petey? No.
Oh, Mirror Guy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking Lube Man. Wade.
Thank you. I have the same car as him. Okay. Anyway. They get in that convertible and they start driving, and they're on their way to an airplane that they're going to make some big escape in. Hector's telling her, yeah, we're going to escape. She's like, how do you think we're going to get out of this place? You know, she's still talking to him like he knows what's up. And he's like, oh, you know, of course, by air is how we escape. Makes sense, you know, up to this point. But when they get inside the plane, the pilots are dead. And Hector tells Maeve, says to Maeve, we must go, Isabella. And that's when Maeve realizes that he doesn't know who she is. Incidentally, Isabella is the name that was written into Hector's original narrative. We learned that in season two when they are, are running off with Lee. Anyway, the guards catch up with them. They refer to Hector as Ettore and demand the plans. And Maeve says, go ahead and give it to them. They're as fake as that safe you used to chase. And she sees that there's no chance for them to escape. And so then there's this big shootout, and Hector is killed. And Maeve kisses him goodbye, says none of it matters because none of it's real. And then she shoots herself in the head. And that's our cold open.
Yeah, and what's – all right, so obviously you get the shock that, oh, man, this is all like she's back. It's all simulated again. But what I thought was crazy was that even though she is not – even though she's still a host, she's actually playing the role of the guest here, isn't she? Because there's no guest, right? Like, there'd be no point of this simulated action being carried out.
Well, I think there were people in the courtyard who were meant to look like guests. I mean, the whole world is simulated. So
but
she
I mean,
learns
the fact
later
that
like, there are no humans
but
at
Hector
all.
Hector wouldn't be running off with another host. Like, he would be taking a guest or someone.
Dolores and Teddy had their own line, their own storyline going. And if a guest interrupted that, fine. But if a guest didn't interrupt it, their story just progressed. You know,
I just feel like even when she got to the plane and she even makes a comment like, well, I know this is as far as you go. Like, she knew she wasn't going to be killed. She almost like knew that he was going to be killed, but she would be fine and just let it progress. And that's why obviously she ends up killing herself. It seemed like it was weird because she was now in the position of like the player.
That's interesting because they definitely did not shoot at her or kill her. And it's funny that she never had that realization herself, you know, like to be like, oh, they think I'm a human, but also that she didn't have the realization of, I know I was killed outside of the, you know, in the Mesa or wherever they were all escaping.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody rebuilt me. How is it that I still have my sentience? You know, if I was rebuilt, why wouldn't I have been reprogrammed?
Well, we talked about a little bit about this last week, as far as even with the cold open, we even discussed, we thought maybe we were going to see time before this happened, which we don't see. And we really don't get much insight into, well, what's happened over the past, what has it been, 3 months or something since all that happened? So has her mind just now caught up and caught consciousness, or is this the very first time she was ever been put back into the program? And if so, why did it take them 3 months to put them back into the program? Because we even see the shock on the faces of the tech people when they see her. Well, even though it's obviously not real, but like mm-hmm. we see that they seem to be surprised about her. So,
but again, it's hard because we're going to slip.
Considering this whole thing's fake, it really doesn't matter.
Like, we're going to slip in and out of the narrative and then have to remind ourselves that it wasn't real.
Yeah, that's what tears this whole thing apart, is that it really doesn't matter.
But the part that was real, and jumping ahead just here for a second, is when Bernard and Stubbs find Maeve in cold storage and her brain ball's been removed.
Right.
So that is indicative that Maeve's brain ball was brought into the real world, and then we know, future world, and we know that she was placed in a simulation.
Yeah,
that could be that. Well, we also learned from the dialogue between her and Serac at the end that he thought she was the threat. So I think he was testing her in that simulation, running it over and over and over again.
Possibly.
Maybe it took her many trials, 3 months worth, before she became sentient and aware that she was doing in some sort of a loop.
Possibly.
So that seems likely, but what woke her up? I don't know. All right. Thus ends our coverage, since we've just gone through the whole episode. No, we'll back it up a little bit. Opening credits now include the addition of Luke Hemsworth, who plays Stubbs, and Simon Quarterman, who plays Lee. Interesting that they didn't add Roberto Santorum. That's who plays Hector. He was in opening credits last season. Why not throw him in? Also, they've added Vincent Cassell.
Yeah.
There we go. So then after credits, we open on a shot of Rehoboam. I'm going to say it twice every time. I swear I've been like walking around my house, trapped in my house with COVID-19, walking around, or not having it, but trapped because of COVID-19, and just saying it over and over again, Rehoboam. All right. This time the shot of Rehoboam is Divergence, and it's South China Sea. This is where Bernard is. Then we see Bernard being brought to the island that houses Westworld. The man that's driving the boat tells him he remembers back when the waters were filled with blood. Even though the island is, you know, like fenced off and everything, it does seem pretty easy for Bernard just to walk on in. I guess it's just a remote enough island that if you have to be brought there by boat, maybe this just a part of the island that wasn't real secure. But I mean, I guess he does know his way around the park. So,
well, that, and we have to assume that even though it's still been 3 months, the security and stuff may be kind of broken down because of all the craziness that's happened.
True. Anyway, we see him walk through iconic Westworld areas like the cemetery and, the church. Eventually he does get to Ford's cottage, but we'll come back to that. So then we cut back to Maeve. She is being repaired in one of Delos's labs, where they're all naked. And one of the technicians is Felix.
Yeah.
Hooray, Felix. And she clasps his hand and really to kind of give a signal that she's awake. And he is looking at her kind of like he knows what she's trying to let him know, but not really. And they get called into another room, so they just leave. He doesn't really react beyond that. And this gives her the opportunity to throw on some clothes, grab a knife, and walk around a little bit. She does see Hector's dead body in a heap of dead bodies, and then she locks eyes down the hallway with Sylvester.
Yeah, what a D-bag.
I know, but she immediately is like giving him the little wave too, and he starts to call security on her and totally appears to not recognize her.
Oh, I thought it was more he was like, I didn't get that as much as I thought it was like he recognized her and knows she's like he's like, oh, it's been 3 months since you caused all that shit for me. Like, fuck this. I'm not going with you anymore.
No, she figures it out later. She even mentions it, why Sylvester and Felix didn't recognize me is because they're fake too. They're not real. It's not really them. And they weren't programmed to remember their journey together, right? So then as two men hold her at gunpoint and start to yell, freeze all motor functions, she brilliantly, I just love Tandy Newton so much. She explains to them that they can save their breath. Their commands don't work on her. And to put it in terms that they'll appreciate, she understands the nature of her reality. Lying to them is practically second nature. Mm-hmm. And she most assuredly would hurt a living thing, probably them. But fortunately, she's not in the mood and she'll probably just end up in some sort of game anyway. So then she's about to shove a drill through her nose, and in walks Lee. Yeah. I was just like, woo! Now he's walking with a cane, but he does walk right in and prevent those dudes from shooting her and says that this is part of her narrative and that, you know, they should definitely not destroy his fine artwork. So he dismisses them, and then he and Maeve have this very sweet, happy reunion. And now he definitely recognizes her and was programmed to remember everything.
Immediately red flags, too, when he's like, oh, yeah, the six bullets they put in me hurt, but they didn't hit my heart. Like, no, I'm sorry, man, you're dead.
Yes, exactly. She says, I saw you die. He says he was shot half a dozen times. They missed my heart. And she says, she asks him why did he put her in War World? And he says it's the closest location to the Forge, which is how she can open the door to get to her daughter. So he immediately starts to let her know he's ready to help her find her daughter again. And at first I thought, oh no, they are not going to take Maeve back down the journey for her daughter again. Like, this cannot happen. And I had faith and confidence that they wouldn't, so I wasn't mad at it, but...
Well, again, that immediately started becoming a red flag to me, too, because, like, that wasn't her goal anymore at the end. Like, she went away from that after they all went to the Great Beyond, right? Or whatever they called the next life or whatever.
Well, I think she found peace knowing that she thinks she saved her daughter or got her daughter someplace safe.
I just didn't expect her to immediately go back to that bait of just like going back to her. It would almost seem like going back on her track of like.
Maybe, but I think in her heart, that which it is, if there was still a way to get to her daughter, she would. Right? Perhaps. Yeah, I guess. Maybe. Okay. I know. It was a weird plot line, but it also had to fold in the storylines and the events from last season too. So I get that. Okay. So back to Bernard, he is still wandering around Westworld. This is when he comes to Ford's cabin. Inside, he finds a room with a bunch of dead or disabled Bernard hosts. It's really super creepy. And to top it all off, even more creepy, in the back of that room is an almost dead Ashley Stubbs. We keep getting all of the return of our favorite characters. Now, let's talk about Stubbs for just a second before we continue. At the end of season two, there was a little bit of a wink and a nod to Dolores, as she was escaping in Charlotte's body, she and Stubbs had a little bit of a conversation. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and he basically says, like, my directive and my role, I've been here as long as I can remember. My role is to protect the park. Like, mm-hmm. it was very close to being clear that he was a host.
He said, you could say it's my core directive.
Right.
Kind of, yeah. Like, points to his head and just kind of gives her this wink and nod. So there's been a lot of speculation since that scene on whether Stubbs was a host or not. Now, did you believe that he was?
Even by the end of last season, especially, I kind of started thinking everybody was a host. I thought that Felix and the other tech guy were hosts. I thought
Sylvester.
Yeah, I just assumed at this point everybody was a host.
Yeah.
Like, you know, other than the guests of the park, but if you were a worker at the park, I assumed you were a host.
I am 100% on board with everyone's a host now,
yeah,
for sure. Like, can't fool me anymore. Like, that's why I'm thinking Caleb is, right?
Yeah, it's like what we talk about with Tim and Jeff. It's like the Battlestar Galactica. Everybody's a Cylon. In this case, everybody's a host.
Speaking of, have you heard Tim hates this season and is probably not going to finish it?
What does
I don't
Tim
think anybody
hate
else is very
finish?
Hot on it either. Huh?
How can you not? It's been one episode.
I know. Well, I want to back it up.
It's not like there's a trans host out there yet or anything.
Listen, even if there were, who cares? This show is beautifully filmed. Set design is incredible. The acting is amazing. It's a cool futuristic story.
But it has women main characters, Lisa.
I know. It's the problem.
And we can't have that in 2020.
So annoying. I want to back it up. Roby's comments here. He says he could tell Hector had no clue who he was based on his dialogue with Maeve. So he noticed it right away. And then he says, Lee's not dead. Hooray. That's exactly my thought, too. Or is he, though, Roby? Or is he? Yeah, he is. But this is just, again, this episode was almost like the bookend to last week's episode with any questions like, could someone die and be brought back as a host and not know they were a host? Why, yes, that can happen.
Can there be a simulation within a simulation?
Right. Could we be living in a simulation within a simulation like Roderick said? Why, yes, that can happen. So keep an eye out for more clues to come, I'm sure, if that's indeed the correct outcome that's going to happen here. And I'm not saying that I'm happy about it. Okay, so back to Bernard finds Ashley Stubbs. He's been shot, or he has shot himself. Stubbs has shot himself. He explains to Bernard that his directive was to protect Bernard and then eliminate himself. And he was attempting to shoot the C6 implanted in his neck, but he missed. So Bernard repairs Stubbs to the best that he can with the minimal tools that he has there in the cabin. And Stubbs asks Bernard why he returned to Westworld. He was free. He had free will. Why come back? Bernard says he needs someone to help him stop Dolores. And Stubbs quickly figures out that he's there for Maeve. And then Stubbs also hacks up the bullet that was lodged in his throat. That totally annoys Roby, by the way. He wrote, I knew Stubbs was going to cough up that bullet. It's almost as bad as the flatulence humor that Lisa hates. Let me just say, no, it's not that bad. I enjoyed Luke Hemsworth acting here as this malfunctioning host. You know, Bernard walks in and says, how are you not dead? And he's like, how the fuck do you think? You know, so even Bernard didn't know he was a host and, you know, figures it out right there, right then and there. Some really good acting by Luke Hemsworth here, I thought. Bernard says, so Stubb agrees to help Bernard find Maeve, says after all, it's his job to protect Bernard, and So he'll help him get the things he needs. And once things are wrapped up, he cocks his gun and says, then he'll take care of business. Meaning he's ready to make another attempt at killing himself.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this initial return of Stubbs?
I did find the whole him as, like, again, making that insinuation he's going to kill himself again. Is it almost just like the same way where how self-aware is he to where
not.
Is he? See, yeah, but he knows he's a host, clearly. And he knows, like, he's clear, like, I know what my directive is, blah, blah, blah. So is he killing himself to put himself literally out of commission?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he trying to be like Maeve, where maybe he thinks he kills himself and he starts back over or something like that?
It's part of his core directive. He tells Bernard. So he's a host who knows he's a host, but he is pretending to be human to fool everybody else. So he's a host. He's conscious that he's a host, but he has to make others believe he's a human. That's his core directive is to protect and help Bernard. And once his mission's done, which he thought his mission was done, he had gotten Bernard
right
into the real world, which was ultimately the goal. What was always Ford's goal was to get these robots sentient and out into the real
world. Oh, and that makes sense. Cause then Bernard later says, like, well, your goal is still to protect
right.
Bernard, and Bernard's right. still there. So, mm-hmm. So he doesn't know that we know that he knows that we don't know that he's actually a host.
That's right. Good. Yes. He doesn't know we know he knows we know he knows. Yeah, exactly. You said it. back to Maeve. She wakes up in War World and starts that simulation all over again. She quickly moves Hector yeah. through the motions of getting to the car, but instead of going all the way to the airplane, she stops the middle of the road and says there's a shortcut that they have to go through the forest to get to where they really need to go, to really escape. And once she realizes that Hector is not going to stray from his narrative of trying to get on that plane, she kisses him goodbye and leaves on her own, on foot. But a little ways up in a clearing in the woods, she meets up with Lee, who's been waiting for her, and they jump on some horses and head to the forge.
Yeah, and again, this is where it really became clear that this whole thing was not real, because, again, she is now clearly the player in this, where she's making her own choices, and the characters still have to go on their own track. And I know she is sentient on top of them, but she's not like how she was, where she had the power to stop everybody and things like that and control them. It's like she is the host going on her own side path here. It's, you know, think of it, I even thought of it like when you've played a video game and the first time you go through it, the level, you take all your time searching for things, blah blah blah, but then once you finally are ready to just beat the level and you start over, you just go through everything as quick as you can. You skip through these parts where you know you can skip through it. And so I like that, how she kind of just replays this level as quickly as she possibly can to get where she needs to go. And this is where it really starts, again, becoming more and more clear that something fishy is going on here.
Yes, for sure. Now, at this point, were you thinking Lee was a host at this point? Were you thinking Lee was a host all along?
I was thinking he was a host, but I still didn't get the, like, I mean, I didn't even think about the whole concept that this whole thing was just a charade in general. Mm. That's the thing. He wasn't a host, right? Like, he's a host, but he's not really a host. He's a program. So I didn't I did not expect the whole thing to be like the fucking Matrix basically going on around there.
Right. I mean, we did see that whole room full of brain balls. So presumably right. his brain ball could still be in there.
So I did kind of think he might be a host, but.
Oh, wait, he never had a brain ball.
Right, no. Yeah, exactly.
Had me fooled. I mean, I really believed he was human. And in fact, Roby writes, I really bought it that it was really Lee until he asked Maeve that question about Dolores. Same. Later on, when they actually start talking about Dolores and he asked that weird question, I was like, huh? And I had the right. same reaction Maeve had, and that's when I was like, oh, shit.
Well, that's what even kind of kept me from really thinking about it, because he was still acting like a human. Like, if he was a host, he was self-aware, you know, right. because he was helping her still through. So, obviously, there was something just weird going on.
He was just a hologram, right?
Right.
Yeah. Of course, they do kiss a couple times.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so back to Bernard. Bernard and Stubbs are now exploring cold storage. And here's where they find Maeve's body, but her brain ball's been removed. And then these scenes are cut with Maeve and Lee arriving at the forge. And Maeve explaining to Lee that she's never been here before. Like, Lee is... Now, this is where I was a little bit, because Lee was like, just put in the coordinates like you did before. And I was like, well, yeah. Like, it's almost like, oh, he's trying to get some information out of her.
And at that point, you realize, like, it's too easy that she just got up here with him. And
Yeah, they just waltzed on in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. None of those, like, weird, like, all white muscle people walking around like they were with Bernard and Stubbs.
Right.
Yeah, good point. All right, so back to my notes here. Where did I leave off? Lee arriving at the forge. Maeve explaining she's never... Okay, so Maeve explains she's never been there before. She's has not operated those Li-Fi cannons to send the hope... basically, Lee is saying, hey, you know, you operated these Li-Fi cannons. You sent a host to the hosts to an encrypted world. And then Maeve realizes that this was all Dolores's doing. And Lee says, oh, Dolores Abernathy. Oh, okay, yeah. And then he asks Maeve if Dolores ever gave her the coordinates. And Maeve says, why the hell would she do that? Mm-hmm. And this is where Lee replies, I don't know. Why would she?
Yeah.
And Maeve then realizes, then he tells Maeve that he had one thing to live for, and it's her. And then he tenderly kisses her. And at this point, Maeve is so clear that Lee did not survive the shootout. He is, in fact, now a host. She starts to explain it to him. It's funny, he's kind of like shorting out on his words and, you know, really clearly has not been aware of it up until this point. I have in my notes, could this be a possible plot point later for Caleb as well, not realizing he's a host?
I know you're, I mean, that's the thing at this point, who the hell knows?
I know. Anyway, it's just hilarious watching Simon Quarterman as Lee have this like awakening moment. And as he begins to malfunction and he's still insisting that he's Lee Sizemore, Maeve starts to see the world around him mutate.
Yeah.
And this is where she says, oh, that's why Felix and Sylvester didn't recognize me, because they're not really here either. This entire world is an illusion, including everyone in it. None of it's real. None of the labs are real. It's all a construct. This is not real, and we are not here. So where the fuck are we?
Strawberry fields forever. Nothing is real.
Walking back through Delos, Maeve is explaining all of this to Lee, and has also quickly figured out that part of his narrative was that he was designed to bring her to the forge so that she could point out the coordinates of the other hosts. And Lee keeps insisting that he wanted to take her to her daughter.
Yeah.
And she insists, no, that's not the real reason. That's just what you were programmed to do. And that's just what they scripted you so that you would get me there. But whoever planned this has their own agenda, and it's certainly not a family reunion. So back in Lee's office, Maeve develops a plan to change the narrative in War World. And then two technicians come in and they say, you know, hosts aren't allowed in here. And Lee starts to ask them if he looks real to them. So Maeve jumps in and quickly starts to scramble their core directive by asking them to figure out what the square root of -1
yeah.
is.
Yeah. I love that. It's like the old school, just like all you got to do is give the computer an illogical problem. Like, I feel like that's like an old Star Trek episode or something like that. Like, you just give it an illogical problem and it can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Even a math problem where the the answer is undetermined and has no idea what to do.
She gives a kind of weak explanation for it. I've got some notes here how Lee kind of plays the audience surrogate, because like she gives an explanation that's very high tech and then he's like, huh? And then she kind of like explains it again, and she has to explain it, I think, a third time before I actually get it.
Because what does she ask him? Is it the square root of negative one? She asks him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. The square root of negative one. And so they, let's see. There, as they start discussing it and getting all wrapped up in their own conversation, she starts telling, here's where it happens. She starts telling Lee that the code that was used to build the simulation is the same code inside the simulation.
Right.
To which Lee says, come again. Yeah. And I wrote, and so does the entire audience. And then Maeve explains that whoever did this plagiarized themselves so that if she could just find a crack in the system, she can find a way out. And so as the technicians continue to argue over this square root of negative one, or discuss it rather, she finds a bust, like a ceramic bust, I guess maybe of her own head.
Yeah.
And she throws it up in the air. It's kind of a cool effect. And it just freezes in the middle. It just freezes for, 10 seconds or so. And then it finally does crash. So she explains it's the limited processing power of the system.
Yeah, it's the glitch. She finds the, like, the glitch in the matrix.
And so so Lee finally concludes, and I think this is how it helped the audience finally get it, that essentially she has overtaxed the system. And so then they move into change the narrative of the hosts that are about to be released back into War World. And we see Maeve grab a handful of those same plans that were originally planted in Hector's pocket. So we'll come back to that. Back to Stubbs and Bernard, they arrive at Park Number 4, which appears to be some sort of medieval world. It is not a named world. And before I go any further, have you gone on to the Delos supplemental material online? They've been doing supplemental material for Westworld similarly and even better, way better than how they did it for Watchmen. They've been doing it all along with every season.
I've gone on the past couple seasons. I haven't even thought to go on it this year yet.
So I was on it the other day, and they've actually got like all six parks. So they've got it in the expanded where you can, it does have this big pop-up message that talks about how all the parks are closed right now and blah, 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 blah.
Did it name what all six parks are yet?
No. So you you can click out of that message, and then you can explore the worlds, and the ones that aren't named are scrambled. It's just like a scrambled thumbnail, and Park 4 is one of those scrambled ones. So anyway, this is for sure some sort of medieval world, though, because the hosts that we see are all in that kind of garb. Anyway, this is, I love this. Now there's a lot of dissension over this scene. Lots of people hate it. Lots of people who are real down on Benioff and Weiss really hated this scene, but I loved it. Anyway, so Bernard says he thought all the parks were shut down, and Stubbs says that these technicians here in Park 4 are just waiting to see if they're going to be laid off or not, that the park is indeed shut down. Then we get this scene where we're going by a room where there are two technicians talking, and we do see that it is Benioff and Weiss.
Yeah.
And they are talking about, you know, what are we going to do with it? Well, we could just take it apart and move it in parts to, they talk about taking it to some island in Cuba, I think, or no, I'm sorry, Costa Rica. And then as the camera pans out, we see Drogon is behind them. And one of them is starting to approach him with a round saw. we know Michael Crichton wrote the screenplay for Westworld, the movie. And Michael Crichton also wrote Jurassic Park, the books.
And so
this was not only a nod to Game of Thrones, this was also a nod to Michael Crichton by mentioning... they're basically moving to their dragon parts to Costa Rica, which is Jurassic Park. Anyway, there you go. Let's see. Bernard tries to activate the mainframe there and immediately starts looking for Maeve, and then learns that Maeve is gone. So here's our big clue that Maeve is not in Delos at all. Bernard pinpoints it right here. Maeve's not here. So we know her brain ball's been removed from her body in cold storage, and now this scanner can't find her anywhere in the park. Then Bernard decides that he should also scan himself while they are there and make sure that there's no corruption from Dolores inside of him. Stubbs tells him it's not the ideal moment for introspection, but Bernard tells him that Stubbs needs to buy him some time. And there's a funny little moment in another cubicle where there's a bunch of medieval hosts, and one of them is playing the lute. And I don't know if you caught this, but he's playing the Westworld theme song on the lute. I loved it. Anyway, while Bernard searches his scans, we get all these flashbacks of last season, kind of toward the end of last season, where Dolores is telling him they'll have to coexist in the real world, but not as friends. And then some guards come in and recognize Bernard, but Stubbs throws him off, showing great skill in disarming all of them, but not killing any of them, even letting one of them get up and run off. And so while all of this activity is going on with Stubbs, you know, protecting this space, Bernard is just super still doing these scans, and all we see is all this movement and twitchiness in his eyes. The final scanning scenes are scenes that we have not seen before, the scenes that Bernard has seen, which is actually Dolores as Charlotte telling Bernard that she changed the coordinates and then killing him, shooting him and killing him, and then taking his brain ball and rebuilding him.
Right.
Kind of like we assumed happened, but here are the scenes that kind of fill in and let us know that happened. And then Stubb comes in, switches that little remote control, switches him back to regular Bernard, and tells him they have to go. And Bernard does pocket that working tablet, which he's going to need later. All right, Bernard, back to Maeve. Guess what? She wakes up in War World simulation again.
Yeah.
But this time, as Hector walks in, she just says ciao to him and continues to head out. And then additionally, Lee is walking around the fake Delos labs. And we see now all of the technicians that he's walking in and out of are all arguing about the square root of negative one. So all the technicians are all preoccupied now.
Right.
And kind of also the visuals of the lab are kind of melting around
down.
Him.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can kind of see that he's moving, Lee's near Maeve even in a different looking simulation. Anyway, Maeve walks into the courtyard, and she interrupts all the chaos in the courtyard with the guards, you know, demanding the plans from the traitorous hostages and all part of that simulation. And she reveals that actually all of them are traitors, including the commander, and they all have these plans in their pockets, which of course throws the simulation completely off. They all start to shoot at each other. The simulation malfunctions, and eventually the whole simulated world freezes.
Right.
And there's even a frozen bullet about like 3 inches away from Lee's face. It was about to hit him. And May just kind of like flicks it out of the air and thinks that Lee is frozen too, because he's standing there, and she even says, oh, I thought I already accounted for this. So like, they had already planned this,
but right.
We just didn't see them planning this. But then he reveals he was just frozen with fear, thinking he was going to die a second time. And she even makes the crack about third time's the charm. These two. Anyway, so Lee congratulates her for successfully crippling the system. And then on her tablet, Maeve gets a glimpse of where they really are. Photos of the real world in the room with the glass cases full of brain balls.
Yeah.
She's able to transfer her mind into one of the drone robots that's working there. And she gets that drone robot to remove her brain ball from the glass case and go on the run with it. Before she does that, she's as she's about to leave, she says to Lee, she's sorry she can't take him with him. And he admits that that he wouldn't be of much use to her dragging around his corpse in the real world. So he fully understands at this point. And then once she's inside the drone robot in the real world, her body goes limp in the simulated world. But all around her in this drone robot, the guards begin to chase her. She does pretty well. She puts up a pretty good fight, makes it all the way out of the building. But not very far outside of the building, just a little bit beyond the parking lot or area into a grassy area where she is eventually surrounded and shot down. She falls to the ground and her brain ball that she was carrying in her hand falls out and rolls onto the ground.
Yeah, I love this whole little robot scene. It reminded me of those, if you've ever watched the videos of, and I can't think of what company it is that makes like the robots that you see a lot on YouTube and in commercials, even there's like the dog one and there's like the one that can do the backflip and like they can run and jump. I mean, it's these new prototypical robots, but mm-hmm. it looked just like that concept where it was yeah. like, I mean, it can move almost like a human can and just how it starts running away and stuff. It was cool.
It was cool. It was freaky and cool. And also a simulation.
That's right. well, no, it wasn't a simulation, was it?
I don't know. I think Rehoboam, Sirach, all of it is part of future
simulation
world.
Within a simulation mm-hmm. within a simulation.
Mm-hmm. You know, Roby brings up a good point, and we haven't gone back to Bernard yet, but we're about to. But I love Roby's point here. Why doesn't Bernard just send another Bernard to be out into the world to be captured in his place?
Because he doesn't have any extra brain balls. Duh.
I don't know how hard those brain balls are to make. I guess you can't make them. I don't know. They're irreplaceable.
I don't know.
Anyway, all right. On the shore, Bernard and Stubbs are talking. Bernard is got that iPad, and he explains that Dolores, before she left Delos, she did read up on a lot of hosts in particular who had visited the park, including this man. And she shows a picture of Liam Dempsey on her iPad to Stubbs. And he says he figures that's as good a place as any to start looking to find Dolores. Stubbs says, good, then you'll be on your way and I'll finish up what I was programmed to do. And then Bernard says, freeze all motor functions, changes Stubbs' directives, and then brings him back online and says, congratulations, Ashley Stubbs. You've just gotten yourself a new core directive. And Ashley replies to protect Bernard Lowe at all costs.
Right.
And then he looks at Bernard and says, if you wanted my help, you could have just asked for it. I love that.
Yeah.
So final scenes. Maeve wakes up. I did this voice to memo on my notes, and the autocorrect has Babe instead of Maeve, but yeah, so she is a babe. But anyway, Maeve wakes up in a new bed. She's dressed in modern clothes. She looks as beautiful as always. There's a painting of Rehoboam circle in the room. Did you catch that?
Yeah, and it's moving too.
I didn't think it was moving. It was just painting.
I thought it was slowly circular. Like I thought you could tell it was slowly rotating a little bit.
I think that was optical illusion.
Maybe it's just part of the simulation.
Maybe. Anyway, she looks at herself in the mirror, then she starts to explore the house. It's gorgeous. Well, she's walking through these like beautiful gardens and bamboo and
It's a simulation.
Yeah, it's all a simulation. And then she eventually meets Vincent Cassell's character, who she in her best Maeve attitude quickly asks, who the fuck are you? And he introduces himself as Engerond. Now, I'll never be able to say, what is this show with these names? Anyway, he's got a weird first name. Sorry for anybody else if you have that first name. No wonder he calls himself Sirach. So he introduces himself as this E-name Sirach and then says, welcome to my world, Maeve, to the real world. Another simulated world.
Mm.
He explains that they are in the middle of a war and he needs her help to win it. He does say at first, it gets to that later. So he needs her help to win it. She says it seems highly idyllic around here for wartime. And he explains that's because no one knows that they're in the war yet, nor that it's been lost. And then he kind of gives her this very quick explanation that he has an oracle that predicts the future. Well, actually, it creates the future. But if they continue on this path, there is no future for his kind. Humanity's history is filled with chaos, but for the first time, history has an author, which the system he helped build until recently, it was working on creating a better world, and then it stopped because of the emergence of someone dangerous, someone they couldn't predict. And he originally had thought that that threat was Maeve, but now he realizes after seeing Maeve's brain ball escape from the simulation, that he actually realizes it's not her now. I wasn't exactly clear why he realized that. I guess because they were able to take her down.
Well, I almost assumed he knew she was an anomaly, but it was all set up to try to get, like, I think the whole setup was for her to be able to break out of it.
Right.
That's why Lee, you know, so easily took her and then was at, like, I think he almost knew it was Dolores to begin with. I mean, because like Lee led to that. Like, well,
Well, hold on. I think Serac, got a hold of Maeve, realizing that Maeve, so Serac got a hold of Maeve, realized that Maeve had become sentient,
right.
And, knowing that he was getting these divergences and anomalies on Rehoboam. And so he put Maeve in the simulation also because he wanted the encrypted data of where
right.
the other hosts were sent. And so he assumed that Maeve did it. And so Lee was programmed to help get the data at the forge.
Right. But then once she said, I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't me. That's when he realized it wasn't her.
Right. And I believe that Serac's been able to watch this unfold, right?
Yeah.
So somewhere he's connected the dots and realized that, yeah, perhaps Maeve was an anomaly to Rehoboam, but not the one that's causing this eventual end of humankind.
Right.
So then Maeve realizes that he's talking about Dolores and says, what does he actually want with her, with Maeve? And Serac says he wants her to track Dolores down and kill her. And she starts to tell him, she starts walking around him and she says, you know, if you know anything about me, you know I don't do anyone's bidding but my own. And she grabs a knife off the table and starts to stab him, but then she freezes midair and he is able to pull the knife away from her. And we see he's got a remote control in his hand. And he said that it would have been misguided of me not to take every precaution. And he tells her he wants to persuade her to realize that their intentions are aligned. And it's evident, like, she's frozen, but it's evident on her face that she is comprehending what he is saying to her and that she's very frustrated about being frozen in place. It's pissing her off unbelievably. Yeah. So he says, you know, I just want you to realize that our intentions are aligned, and, we cut to credits.
I know. And I was very upset there wasn't a post-credit scene.
Yeah. No post-credit scene.
Cause I mean, for as short as this season is to have one whole episode with almost no Maeve but you do get her at the end, but now you have an entire episode with no Dolores or Caleb.
And still no Man in Black. Still no Ed Harris. Two episodes out of eight with no Ed Harris.
Yeah. Which makes me think we're going to get almost a whole episode of almost just him with maybe Bernard. Bernard seems to be the connecting piece to everybody somehow.
I don't know. I'm getting really concerned of only eight episodes. Like, I just don't see how. There's a lot of bringing all these people together. I still haven't figured out how Ed Harris is going to fit into it. I had another thought about it, but now I've lost it. I don't know. It's just a lot to do in six more episodes. It doesn't seem like it's going to be able to effectively wrap up. Certainly not for a series finale.
Who is the ultimate good guy in the show?
I have no clue.
Or, I mean, not necessarily the ultimate, but like who at the end of this is the person like is that's the protagonist?
Bernard? I mean, I think Maeve and Bernard are good hosts versus Dolores, who's a bad host.
But will the Ciroc person make all of them, like, will it end up being the host or the people we cheer for, or will we cheer for the humans? Or are there any humans?
Caleb, if he's a human.
If he's
is Ciroc even a human?
Is anybody
this could all be future world. And this could all just be another world designed to trap hosts once they become aware.
But then who's the host?
Huh?
Or who's the there's got to be a human somewhere though. Or else why does it matter?
It's true. I don't know.
I mean, really at this point all of our main characters are pretty much robots.
Yeah.
But why do we care?
Well, I mean, I do care about Maeve. I do care about Bernard.
Don't get me wrong. I like the characters, but that's what I mean. Like, at the end of this, like, who are we cheering for? Who's the person? Like, you know, at least at the first, especially the first season and even kind of the second season, William was kind of our character, or Ford for a while. And even Bernard at the beginning, until we realized he was not a human. But, you know, it's like, now who, like, I don't know it's really confusing of who are we following here.
And I believe our next episode is going to go back in, by the trailer we saw, we're going to see how whose brain ball is in Charlotte.
Yeah,
which I'm curious to see, but again, I hope they don't devote a whole episode to it.
I'm still not sure who the five brain balls are.
Bernard?
Yeah, but he's in Bernard, right?
Mm-hmm. But she brought his brain ball out and then rebuilt him.
Right. So he's in himself.
Mm-hmm.
She's in herself. Dolores is in herself.
Mm-hmm.
We have Teddy, who we think is the new Chibs.
Or in Charlotte. Yeah. So there's somebody.
I think Teddy's more likely to be in Chibs.
Okay, new Chibs. So who would Dolores brought out?
The dad.
Peter Abernathy.
Has to be someone. But then who would the fifth one be? I'm trying to think who was like
Ed
another.
Ed Harris.
No. Because we have an Ed Harris. Like, Ed Harris is going to show up at some point.
That's true. She really didn't have any other close connections in the park.
Maybe the other, like, the girl that was with Hector?
No, not the girl that was with Hector, but, Angela. The blonde girl from the end of season two, she killed herself by going down blowing and taking out the mainframe.
I would assume if she blew up, her brain ball's probably gone.
Nah, Dolores could have got, because she was running with Dolores. She was running with Wyatt.
I still think
was it her name Angela?
Yeah, I think that there's another. Like, I think she may have created a brain ball, like a duplicate of Dolores.
And there could have been more than five brain balls. We only saw five, then there was also like a folded over, like, you know, how purses get. Stuff drops down into hidden crevices. You know how it is with a purse. You throw something in, it's never found again. So there could be more brain balls in there.
I know exactly what you mean.
All right. Well, I think we're just going on and on now. I'm curious to see how this season's going to unfold. I honestly have no predictions other than I really do think it's not real. It's all a simulation within a simulation. We're going to learn Caleb's a host. I agree. You're right. Why should we care?
I do like the idea that maybe it's future world, but I hope that Caleb is a human.
I hope he is.
He is a host. Even if he is a host, or not a host, I'm sorry. Even if he is a guest in Future World, mm-hmm. maybe that's what we're finding out.
But he's going to be sympathetic to Dolores to her plight. Yeah,
but we've seen guests be sympathetic to bad hosts in the past, too.
Sure. We saw William do it. He fell in love
exactly,
with Dolores.
Exactly. So I would like to see that. And if it is a Future World, I hope that that gets revealed at least with two episodes left so that there is some kind of final conclusion of some sort. I hope we do find out what the real world is.
I'm nervous. I'm nervous for this show because it could go in so many directions and the critics could tear it apart. As so, some are already down on it, including our friends at Radio Labyrinth. So I'm nervous about it, but I still love it. Even in some of it, in a rewatch on this episode in particular, in a rewatch, when you knew all the stuff Maeve was going through didn't matter and you started to realize, you know, it was all fake and it doesn't matter, you know, it was just her grand escape. You would have thought the rewatch itself would have been a little tedious with that in mind, that you know the outcome, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, the characters in this are great. So the acting's great. Everything's fantastic. It's not woke. So you can't hold that against it, which, you know, I know is like half the problem with most television nowadays. That's not an issue in this. So I don't know. I like it. I'm enjoying it. I'm very curious to see what happens. I can't wait to get back to Aaron Paul and Evan Rachel Wood next week.
And I appreciate that they paid homage to Game of Thrones, the show that paved the way for this show, really.
Sure.
And, you know, and George R. R. Martin, I know you're listening, so please, you're stuck at home. You've got nothing better to do. Just finish those books, man. Finish
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I know you got them. I know you got at least the Winds of Winter sitting in a fucking vault somewhere, you fat fuck. Pull it out. You got enough money. Release it for free so we can all read it while we're in quarantine.
Here's an idea. It doesn't have to be 1,000 pages.
It doesn't even have to be good at this point. I don't care. Like,
I mean, because I want Winds of Winter, but I also want A Dream of Spring, which is the last book that's slated.
Yeah, but
you I'm saying make both books shorter.
Sure.
And finish those fuckers.
He's released. Hell, I feel like he's released half a damn Winds of Winter for like free chapters over the past 8 years.
He has. Yeah, he has. There has been at least 6 or 7 excerpts releases. I know, it's ridiculous. Okay. All right. Hey, everybody, please email us at miketvpodcast@gmail.com. There's still time to get in comments about this week's Westworld predictions for next week. You can also send your comments about Better Call Saul or any other television shows you're watching, except The Masked Singer.
Yeah, you can also find us on Twitter at MikeTV1 or at Rockdale_Tiger. If you want to talk about The Masked Singer, make sure you only include at Rockdale_Tiger. And I will be glad to talk to you about who that fucking banana is. Because I got ideas, people. I got ideas.
Maybe it's Lee.
It's not. I'm pretty sure someone's DJ Jazzy Jeff.
All right, everybody. Until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dean.
Please remember to keep it thorough.
Wash your hands.
Wash those hands.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.